Hello there, football fans. Welcome to Monday's edition of the Soccer Central podcast. James Sharman here alongside John Molinaro, getting geared up for a very busy week in European football. Champs League resumes, Europa League resumes. Oh my, J-Mo, you excited?
I am. Some really good games this week.
Great games.
PSG-Chelsea. I'm looking forward to Bayern Munich and Shakhtar because I think that's going to be a bit closer than everyone seems to think. And then there's some really good Europa League ones from Fiorentina Spurs, Besiktas Liverpool, and from a historical perspective, Inter and Celtic. So there's some really good games this week.
Basel and Porto just stands out to me as being the one to watch, though.
Come on now. Don't be that way.
The laughter you hear in the background there is the one, the only, Bobby the Brains McMahon. Hey, Bobby.
That wasn't a laugh. That was a snigger.
I'll ask you maybe a question on that game at some point. And no offense to Basel and especially Porto. Porto's the real deal, but it's just not the kind of game that grasps your attention just yet, especially considering the other matches this week. And we should probably start, Bobby, with PSG hosting Chelsea. Listen, PSG have been talking a big game for a long time. Remember when Leonardo took over, I guess 3 years ago now, he said that this team is being built for European success, not for French success, European dominance. Are we going to see it now?
They haven't walked the talk yet, have they? Haven't even come close. Haven't even, I would suggest, even surpassed Lyon's performances. And I think that's a benchmark that a lot of people are forgetting. Remember Lyon through that, the mid-2000s, and I think they finished up, was it maybe 2-10 they got to the semi-final and lost to Bayern Munich? That was the furthest they got, but basically, you know, it used to be, for Lyon, it used to be quarter-finals and out. And you look at PSG, they've gone out and away goals the last couple of years, it's been pretty much the same thing. So the reality is that for all the talk PSG have come up with, they really haven't walked that talk yet. And you've got a situation where the team's getting a little bit older. They're going to have to retool it. All things don't seem to be very very happy at PSG. And you have a Qatari owner who receives a fakey sponsorship from another Qatari group, and their games are broadcast by, can you guess, a Qatari-owned TV station. Can you see the link here?
You know, what I find actually really amusing too is that, you know, the whole talk about Laurent Blanc's future and will he be gone and who might replace him, and they're saying, well, it might be Michael Laudrup, who right now is coaching in Qatar. It's as if he's being sat there. Let's see how you do, how he work with you, and then maybe next year when Blanc leaves, we'll bring. It is a farce, isn't it? And you know, Jose is going to mention financial fair play at some point between now and the second leg, because he's not having 1 second of it, and nor should he.
But he has got a bit of a brass neck to do it.
Yeah.
Because the advantage Chelsea had and Abramovich has had is that they got in early. I don't think they necessarily did it because they realised what was going to happen with financial fair play, but they snuck under that bar. And I think, to be fair to Manchester City, they snuck under the bar, but they've snuck under the bar because of the value of the Premier League and the TV rights going up. You can't see that happening in the French League. The French League have actually pre-sold their overseas rights already right through to the end of 2024 for $90 million a season.
Wow.
It's not a lot of money, is it?
Not compared to that deal that is broken in England.
No. So you look at that overseas, so domestically they're not going to hit the Premier League. So it's. I would have to say PSG are in a bit of a financial conundrum.
Bobby, when you look at this matchup between the French champions and the London-based club, how do you see this playing out? I mean, how do Chelsea and PSG match up against one another?
I think the gap's widened since last year, John. I think you know, Chelsea's performance in Paris last year wasn't great.
Right.
That late goal that the French got, certainly, you know, it was an important goal. Going from 2-1 to 3-1 is a big, big difference in Champions League and Europa League with away goal, with that extra goal, not negating the away goal that Chelsea got. But then when they went back to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea gave them a bit of a pummeling, I thought. And I think, you know, if Chelsea are fit, you've got Costa, Fabregas, who have made them far better teams. They're far better equipped, I think, this year than they were last year. And there's a mentality that's different. And I think with PSG, you almost get the feeling that if they haven't gone backwards, they haven't certainly gone forwards this year. They're not having their own way in the French league. They've got big injury problems coming into this game, and you would just have to say that, you know, all things are not well with PSG. So it is going to need, I think, a massive effort if PSG are going to beat Chelsea, and I don't actually see that happening.
You mentioned the injury problems. They picked up, you know, several injuries on the weekend against Caen. One of them being, I think, the most noteworthy being. Johan Cabaye. He's been ruled out for the first leg. How much are they going to miss him, do you think?
Well, Cabaye's kind of been on the, he's been a wee bit on the periphery. We know that he's a very, very good player. And he's the kind of player, you know, going back to James's original comment that Leonardo made, he was the kind of signing that you really need if you're going to be successful in European competition, because he added depth to the squad. And when you're trying to fight on maybe two, maybe three fronts, you need that depth. But you look at him and you look at a number of other players that they're going to have out, they're still, when you come down to it, I think very much they go as Ibrahimovic goes. If he has a game and he turns on the magic, then they're a very, very good team. If he takes a day off, then they haven't really got much else to fall back on in terms of winning the game.
Ibra's stats, though, have declined a fair amount compared to last year. He's been hurt a fair bit, although he did score a lovely goal on the weekend, up 2-0 on Cannes, but of course they tied that one 2-2. I look at Edinson Cavani, though, and I know when he was at Napoli, he was just a force. He was brilliant in the Serie A. Comes to the French League, PSG, gets stuck on the wing because Ibra can't play in the wing. Ibra's one-dimensional, and Cavani can play there. Has better, I guess, defensive acumen as well. But his numbers, although not horrible, are nothing like they were for Napoli. To me, it seems a complete waste of a great talent. And I don't want to blame Ibra. I love Ibra. He's wonderful. But, I mean, he really is, you know, forcing, I think, Blanc's hand and how he deals with Cavani.
I think it'd be fair to describe Ibra as a dominant individual or a dominant personality. You go back to Cavani in the Napoli years. Cavani was reshaped in Napoli from the player he was at Palermo, and I think a lot of that was the way Napoli set up in terms of a counter-attacking style. And you see with Cavani and his success with Uruguay as well, where that kind of played that front three. You go back to South Africa when they had. That front three of Suarez, Cavani and Forlan were incredibly effective playing on the counter-attack. I think with PSG, they're in a situation where they dominate more of the ball, so it's more about breaking down defences than it is counter-attacking them, and that calls for a different skill set, so that might be wearing a bit thin in Cavani as well. And you also get the sense that from the newspaper reports anyway, he just isn't very happy with what's going on at PSG.
Bobby, you know, last year, you know, it was the first year back for Mourinho. They didn't win anything. They, you know, didn't win the league. He's been given pretty much free rein to rebuild the club in his image this offseason. So, I mean, surely there's no excuses now that I would think he has to sort of, you know, at least reach the semifinals, if not win this tournament. Otherwise, his future might be in doubt. Or am I reaching there?
I don't think he's, you know, if he failed on all fronts, I think, John, I think that might be a fair comment. I don't see him failing on all fronts. I think you're definitely going to see Chelsea picking up silverware in terms of Champions League or, more likely, the Premier League. But I think, you know, going back to your comment there, I think it's one of the great stories of last year that everybody seems to be ignoring is Chelsea should have won the Premier League last year.
Yeah.
They were in a great position to win it. They had the easiest schedule by far. And it was almost like Mourinho talked them down and talked them out of winning the Premier League with all his downplaying of it. But you're right, he's kind of remodeled this team a little bit. You know, Lampard's gone. He's still got that solid, solid defence that lies deep. But Fabregas has obviously contributed a lot more in terms of creativity and the ability to deliver that final pass that can unlock defences. I think that was... You looked at Chelsea's performances and their record against poorer teams in the Premier League last year and the number of times they dropped points against poorer teams because the poorer teams sat back, they sat deep, and Chelsea could not find a way of unlocking them. well, you throw in a player like Fabregas, and he's got the ability to make that pass that many other players can't. I think that's been very helpful. Costa, obviously, has been a big benefit to them as well. But you look at some of the other players, Hazard is obviously a great, great talent. William comes in and does a job as well. So overall, they look like a pretty balanced squad. The one question mark I think everybody has about them going into the stretch, because it's a very, very busy stretch of the year, is the squad deep enough to do the job on, because they're still talking about they're still in the Capital One Cup as well. Is the squad deep enough to do the job on so many fronts?
Jose talks about the Premier League being his priority this year, but I'm still really fascinated to see what he'll do if, during that busy schedule, a big Champions League game comes up. Will he rest players for the Premier League? That ain't going to happen. He's going to play his top 11, I'm sure, every time with Chelsea in the Champions League. Given that, do you think Juan Cuadrado is going to become one of those key players? You would think that if he gets in there, it'll be the expensive Willian. But like you mentioned there, so far Willian has really done a good job this year for Chelsea.
Well, I think he's just helped a little bit in terms of that depth they've got. I think William is one of these players that he's a very reliable player, and I think that, you know, that one of the threads that runs through the Mourinho years is he loves reliable players. He loves players that he knows what he's going to get out of them. And I think that kind of aspect he brings to it in terms of knowing what to expect for players, putting them in positions where they can deliver. I think that's one of the great assets that Mourinho has. He doesn't ask players to do things that they can, and he looks for very reliable players. He looks for players that are going to do the grafting in terms of the defensive side of the game as well. He's going to have players that are going to press. He's going to do all these kind of things. And Cuadrado, I think, is maybe a little bit of an indulgence. And I think it goes back to maybe a little bit like that Fabregas type of asset. He's not a player like Fabregas, but in as much as he's a player that can perhaps unlock a defence with a little piece of magic, I think that's what he's looking for, is that extra little bit that might be on offer in tight games. But you know, you go back, he's given up a Schürrle, who's a more grinding kind of player, for that little bit of magic that Cuadrado can give them. So it is going to be interesting. But I think your other point, James, about resting players, one of the things that he was able to do when he won the Champions League with Milan, Inter Milan in 2010, was you go back and you look at that season, and Inter took their foot off the gas a little bit in February. And the story at that time was that Mourinho had actually stepped up the fitness regime at Inter, specifically because he knew what was coming after. And they went into a little bit of dip. I think that was about the time they played Chelsea as well in the Champions League. And then suddenly February came and went, and they had their foot on the accelerator, and they kind of just... They just ran the opposition for the last couple of months of the season. I'm not sure he's going to have the same ability to do that this time with Chelsea.
Yeah, really good points. Shakhtar Donetsk take on Bayern Munich, who are coming off an 8-0 win on the weekend. I guess they've bounced back. But this Shakhtar team, it's their first competitive action since the last Champions League action, because the Ukrainian League and their winter break, which is quite amazing, really. That goes way, way back. I mean, this is a pretty rusty team. Obviously a team in some disarray given the issues in Ukraine right now. And you look at the top players, the flair players on that team, the Douglas Costas, Luis Adriano, they both wanted to move away in January. They're both angling for moves to Roma. Chelsea at one point wanted Costa. You do wonder about this team and morale, don't you? I know they've done a great job there so far. It used to be a destination for South American players, but in this day and age, given what's happened there, it's going to be quite an interesting spectacle to watch, I think, when they return to play.
Am I allowed to put on my grumpy old guy persona now, James?
Oh, I thought you had.
What the hell's wrong with these players nowadays? What, the one out of a war zone?
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Come
my
on,
God, when I were a lad.
There's no pleasing some people.
No. There isn't, is there?
No, it's just, God, they're soft, aren't they? What the hell's wrong with them?
A war zone, really? My God, though. Well, that being said, I mean, a lot of players were making moves to Anji, weren't they?
Right.
Yeah, in the Georgian conflict, you know, because money talks, I guess, right?
Yeah, but it stutters sometimes as well, doesn't it?
Does it ever?
But Shakhtar, I think, you know, you look at their performance in the Champions League already, they've done pretty well to get the last 16. I think, obviously, in all seriousness, the situation in Ukraine is a very serious one. And it has got to be... I think, it, you know, perhaps if there's, it's a ridiculous saying, an upside to this, it might be one of these situations where the situation's so bad that it's actually focused everybody's attention, and to some extent Shakhtar and actually playing games is a bit of escapism for the players, because they did very, very well. They've been a good team the last, maybe 6-7 years. The kind of team we always think is maybe going to break out, maybe just step up that extra little bit and go deep into the competition. And then they run into trouble. I remember a few years ago, I think it was Barcelona, some people suggesting there might be a dark horse and might be able to beat Barcelona. And you know, as it turned out, didn't get any place close to that. And I don't think that Shakhtar, if they're going to have any chance at all, they've got to go to Munich still with a chance. And Bayern Munich, maybe if there's a little bit of an Achilles heel, it might be how they travel. But it's only a small Achilles heel. But I think, you know, Shakhtar have got a massive, massive job in front of them, and I just can't see them beating Bayern Munich over the two legs.
Shakhtar striker Luis Adriano, he leads the tournament in scoring with 9 goals, had a fantastic group stage, although
I think two good games.
Yeah, 2 good games. But still, he has been in form in the competition. How do you think he'll sort of go up against that Bayern defense?
I think it comes down to how much of the ball he can actually get, and that's a problem. I think James made a comment to me last week about how much he enjoys watching Bayern, and I think part of that is you never quite know what Guardiola is going to come up with. But the one thing you know that he's going to stress is a dominance with the ball, and I think that's one of the problems that the teams when they come up against Guardiola type teams, is they just don't see enough of the ball, so they've got to be incredibly disciplined when they have the ball to try and find their passes, and they find themselves under so much pressure that they go for long stretches and they just get frustrated and eventually worn down. So Adriano, good record, not just this year, but he's been a pretty good striker in terms of European competition over the last number of years. So he's obviously one of the better strikers in the competition, one of the better strikers in Europe, but it really comes down to how much of the ball he's actually going to see.
I was surprised looking at Bayern Munich stats this season, and we know Lewandowski's been inconsistent, but he's got 8 goals. Müller's got 9 goals. He'll have his usual probably 12 to 15 goals. Götze has got 9. Inconsistent. Arjen Robben has 14 goals on this season. Now, we know what this guy is, how good he is, Bobby. But it seems like for the first time, maybe he's becoming a prolific goal scorer, isn't he? What a season from Arjen Robben.
Well, Robben's, it's interesting because when my first inclination when I heard that Guardiola was going to Bayern Munich, I thought, well, that's time up for Robben.
Yeah, me too.
And it hasn't turned out anything like that. And he's turned out to be one of these Real Madrid reclamation projects. And everybody talks about the great players that Real Madrid sign. What about the great players that Real Madrid transfer?
Oh, so many. Kalsian Hantelaar.
Yeah, you go back to Schneider.
Schneider, yeah.
Back to 2010, who was so central to Inter winning the Champions League.
Michael Owen.
Jonathan Woodgate.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Woodgate going there. Oh,
absolutely.
My God. Yeah.
But there are. I think it was Arsene Wenger once said that what he really wanted to be was standing outside the Real Madrid dressing room door come transfer day, because the number of players they cut loose through their, they got to sign a superstar, so one's got to go out. And that's the way we kind of are with Real Madrid. But Robin is, he was a fantastic player the years he was with Chelsea. I remember the best comment, though, I remember Robin was about his proclivity to miss games through injury. Yeah. And I think there was one quick comment came from an unnamed Chelsea staff member that said Robin was going to be out this week because he'd suffered a twisted sock.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so you go from that and you go through his Real Madrid years, and really Bayern Munich, he seems to be getting, I think what he's become is a stronger player. I think physically he's stronger. He still does tend to fall down now and again.
Here and there, yeah.
But physically he's a strong player, and he's quick. He's always been quick. But I think that combination of experience and kind of physical strength has made him... He's one of these players, actually, when you think about it. You wonder why he isn't mentioned when the Ballon d'Or comes up for nomination.
I think he's just really unpopular because he's a little rat.
That's the other thing is people like him, and people who hate him.
Yeah. And play against him, you know that he's chirping, he's diving.
Yeah.
You know, fellow players aren't a big fan of him.
Yeah. At least he's no longer the oldest looking teenager in the world.
but he hasn't changed, right? He looks the same as he did 10 years ago when he looks old for a 18-year-old. I'm looking at his stats here. He scored 16 goals for Bayern back in 2010. And that was the most prolific so far. Apart from that, he's generally in that kind of 8 to 12 kind of range.
What were you like with Chelsea, James?
I've got it here. In 05-06, he scored 6 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back another year here. in the Prem, he has 7 goals the year before that. At PSV at that point, he has 6 goals. So he's really, you know, aside from that one 16-goal campaign, he's a wide man, right? He's not really known for being a goal scorer, but this year certainly he's stepping it up, and he's got 14 so far, and that Bayern Munich team in the Bundesliga, he could get 20 this year quite easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you think back to that Chelsea team, wasn't it? It was Damien Duff on one side and Robert on the other.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, of course, I guess the other thing you think of as well is, although he was a winger, but I think he's become more of an inverted winger. He was one of the original inverted wingers, but he chopped and changed sides. Now I think you see him much more on that right side. But you also see him the way the Dutch used him in the World Cup, really as a central kind of support striker as well. And that ability to use him on the counter was kind of different as well. So I think, to give him his due, he's morphed into a much more rounded player as well than back to the beginning with PSV and Chelsea.
On Wednesday, Schalke hosts Real Madrid in the first leg of their round of 16 tie. A year ago, the Spaniards shellacked the Germans 6-1. It's quite a different team now from a year ago. Roberto Di Matteo has been in charge. What have you made of the Germans since the Italians took over?
Well, the change had to be made when Jens Keller was moved out because they started very, very slowly. They seem picked up some decent form. They did run into a Chelsea side that in the fall there that really took them apart. It's one of these situations, and it maybe runs through the last eight, but I just wonder when we look at the Champions League now, we're really talking about the last eight being made up of, like, it's per many eight teams from about 12, and there's 4 teams there that you really can't really see getting through, and Schalke has kind of won them. They had that good run a number of years ago, I think when they went out to Manchester United in the semi-final. So they're a team that are there and thereabouts all the time, but that you never really feel that they've really got enough to get into that final or win the tournament. They collect their money, and I think it's going to be another situation with them this year as well. The Real Madrid, can't see them beating them. Drexler's been injured. Farfan's been injured, Huntelaar suspended, so they're coming into it with some problems, and I just can't see Real Madrid finding a way to lose this.
Although Real certainly aren't playing with the same verve as they were before Christmas, Ronaldo in particular, since winning the Ballon d'Or, he's turned 30, he's lost his girlfriend, he's not scoring goals, he's partying after big derby losses. Is this the beginning of the end for Cristiano Ronaldo, Bobby, James, I say facetiously.
James, that sounded very like the setup to the old George Best story about where did it all go wrong,
yeah,
George.
Yeah, the bellboy, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
To be serious, though, it's perhaps a one question mark. You look at the form of Real Madrid in the fall and right through to the new year. Dominant, brilliant. Now in Spain, there's a 1-point gap with Barcelona. Maybe they're just drifting a little bit. Now, not to say you look at the talent on the side, and you've got to accept that, things start clicking for them again, and things will start clicking for them again. They are, they've got to be one of the teams you consider is going to win the Champions League and potentially La Liga as well. But they're in this is the time of year. It's a Johan Cruyff time of year. This is the time you decide. We find out whether teams have got enough to win trophies. It's fine playing well in the fall, but this is February, March, April, May. This is when you've got to really put the foot down, find your form, because you do it this time, you start winning trophies. And maybe that's the one doubt about Real Madrid just now, is maybe they've just found a bad time to lose their form. Still don't think Schalke is going to beat them, but it really is a very, very important time. You know, this is where all the pressure's on them as well. In terms of can they take the pressure from Barcelona, that dismantling from Atletico Madrid as well. So there's some questions being asked that weren't necessarily there in the fall.
You know, we talk jokingly there about Ronaldo being on the wane, and obviously it's not the case. But I'm curious about Iker Casillas because, you know, I think for the longest time he was rightly regarded as, you know, one of the top, if not the top goalkeeper in the world. But I don't know. I don't think it's terribly unfair to say that, you know, this hasn't been his best season. You know, last year he was very much splitting time with Diego Lopez. I mean, long term, do you see his future with Real Madrid? I mean, where do you think he'll be next year?
It's an interesting point, John, because it even goes back into the Mourinho year as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Real Madrid as well, in terms of Mourinho being the first one to actually question what kind of form he was. You go back 4 years, you go back to the time in South Africa and win the World Cup. Like Casillas, you have to name the top two or three goalkeepers in the world, and 99% of them, of people would have had him in the, you know, number one or at least number two or number three.
Yep.
But the form's just disappeared. You wonder if it's one of these situations, and you've seen it a number of times with goalkeepers. The form just seems to disappear, but sometimes maybe a change of scenery is what he needs, and maybe a manager and maybe fans getting off his back, a manager that believes in him, and form comes back. The great thing, of course, about goalkeepers, as we all know, is you're looking at a very different longevity in terms of playing at the top. I don't know, what's Casillas now? Maybe about 31, 32?
Yeah, he's not as old as you might think, right? He's still, I guess,
he played that against Bayer Leverkusen, I think, as an 18-year-old, didn't he, when he came off
exactly.
the bench?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
So what does that make him? Maybe 31?
I can find out with the interweb right here.
Yeah, but he could be, you know, find another club. He could be at the top of his game for another 6-7 seasons.
And don't forget, you know, he's a legend there, obviously, but so too was Raul. And Raul left, right? You know,
Legends leave sometimes.
Salgado, you know, Herrera. You know, Real love their golden boys, but they're prepared to let them go when it's time. He's 33, actually. Yeah. He'd be 34, actually, in May.
Yeah, so you give him another, you know, you could get at least another 4 years, 5 years out of him.
Now, what MLS team would take a gamble on a DP goalkeeper?
Oh, that's a hard sell in the United States.
It'd be a disaster, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Even if it's him.
Yeah, you're more likely to find Ibrahimovic there first.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. Maybe he'll get a job in Qatar, strangely enough.
Stepping stone at PSG.
Yeah, Sarigu's not getting the job done there, and they're going to just sign him maybe at some point. Bobby, I want to quickly mention Porto against Basel. I made fun to start the
you
show.
Did
and
make
I
fun.
Did.
You've upset all the Porto and Basel fans.
I always upset
the
Porto fans. Doesn't matter what I say about them. Like I say, they're going to win the World Cup and they'll attack me. But listen, Porto is a decent team, though, and there's some really good players emerging. And traditionally speaking, a lot of very good players come through the ranks at Porto. Do you see the same thing happening this season?
They have a great business model that fits the reality. Is they, you know, and a lot of it's around third-party ownership, admittedly, but they're a great staging post. Jackson Martinez scoring goals, anybody that scores goals in Europe is going to be, any place in the world is going to be somebody's linked to a move. It looks like he might finally move on this summer. He's always been one of these players that are linked with transfer rumours, but he's kind of indicated he's wanting to go out. But the couple of players that the reports have that, I think, well, one was seen perform on the world stage already, Quintero, young Colombian. He had a great age group World Cup a couple of years ago. And the other one that hearing really good reports about is Oliver Torres, who's actually on loan at Porto from Atletico Madrid. And I remember seeing him, and I think in the Spanish team that won, is it? I always get confused. Is it European
under-21s?
Under-21, yeah. That's
yeah. Right. Yeah, was that maybe 2 years ago, two seasons ago?
When they beat Italy, or was that the one?
I think so.
Was it France?
Isco was. I think Isco was in the same Spanish side.
Yeah, that would have been 2 years ago.
Ilera Mendy as well, right?
And Torres, I thought, was actually. I really liked the look of him, and apparently he's playing quite well for Porto as well. Whether he's cracking the starting lineup as a regular, I'm not too sure, but he's a player that we should keep an eye on as well. So Porto will keep on kind of churning through. But the one thing I always find interesting about Porto, you look at the team and Helton's still in the goal.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Right.
Yeah. If Casillas is 33, how old's Helton now?
Helton's gone on for ages. Like, he's been dropping balls in the net for 8 years. But, you know, he's a kind of player that he makes saves that you don't think he's going to make, and he allows goals that you think, God, an amateur should be able to stop. But they stuck with him.
He is 36.
Oh, there you go.
37 in May as well.
Yeah. Any Qatar links there?
Not yet, but okay. I dare say
you and your
pretty
Qatar
soon.
Links today. Holy jeez!
Well, it's nonsense, isn't it? Really, come on.
I think we're looking for a Qatari sponsorship.
Well, yeah, damn right we are, Bobby. I can be bought. I don't know about you.
I'd like some absolutely. Of that cat money. Yeah, for sure.
I've got no integrity. Bobby, great job, mate. Really enjoyed that. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Great stuff. Thanks, guys.
All right, it's Bobby the Brains McMahon. That was a good chat.
Always good talking.
Good games coming up this week, like I said.
There really are. Yeah.
A good weekend of games too. Italy was really odd this weekend, right? So the top two teams played the bottom two teams.
Yeah, and they drew.
And they drew both two. Yeah, both Roma and Juve drew.
Yeah, Roma drew on Saturday at home to Parma, and Parma was full value for the draw. And then Juventus went to Cesena, who are second bottom, and Cesena actually took the lead, and then Juventus struck back with two goals, and then Cesena drew. And they were, again, they were full value for the draw. And it was... It's interesting because Cesena plays in one of these stadiums that very much is like an English stadium, in that it's the stands are right on top of the sideline. So it was a great atmosphere. It really was. And full credit to Cesena. They really gave Juventus a hard time, exposed Juve's back line is pretty slow. And, you know, a little unlucky that they didn't win that game.
Now, Juve's not playing the back three now, right?
No,
four. Back four. Back four. Yeah, now. Are people now clamoring for the back three to return?
No, I think they kind of recognize that they should go with four. So I think there was more. I mean, Pirlo made a dreadful giveaway that led to.
Is
the
he looking
goal.
Human this year?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, look, it's
well, looking 36 years of age.
He's looking 36. Yeah. I mean, look, he's still Andrea Pirlo. I think he's still useful. Is he the player that he was? You know, 8 to 9 years ago, whatever it was at in Germany at the World Cup. No, he's not. But he's still pretty good.
Is he still going to crack the Azzurri 11?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I don't know. Who knows?
You think, yeah.
Who knows? Right. What's always killed me, not killed me, what I've never quite understood is he, not that he dallies on the ball, but he's given a lot of time on the ball to do his thing. I've never quite understood why more teams don't sort of press him more to making him do a quick decision. Because, I mean, if you let him operate, without sort of, you know, unmolested, then he's going to burn you. He's going to, like, spread those passes around.
But it's often we talk about great athletes in any sport. It could be hockey, soccer, rugby, and the greatest. Why are they given so much space? Why do teams allow them this right. respect? And it's often because they do things that it isn't actually that easy to close them down. You know, because they are so intelligent.
Sure.
They are thinking two steps ahead.
Right.
So maybe they do try and, you know, pressure and press, but the quicker. I don't know, but there's got to be a reason for it, because you're right. It makes complete sense. Why wouldn't you?
Right.
But there must be a reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very intelligent player. So, I mean, you know, he does have, you know, quickly release the ball. But I think you can, and I've seen in some games when he is pressed, then he is prone to making mistakes. And I think that's just the way you have to play against him.
Is Verratti still going to be the heir apparent in that role?
I don't know.
You're not a Verratti fan, are you?
I'm kind of torn on him. I mean, he's technically a very good player, but I think attitude-wise, he's... Mm-hmm. Reminds me of Cassano in a bit, which isn't good.
And those fighting words.
Yeah. Call it as I see it.
FA Cup this weekend, Liverpool looked pretty good beating Palace in that Balotelli came on for the second half.
Yeah.
And I thought it was his best game since that big Spurs win.
Really?
He played with Sturridge.
Wow.
Before the Sturridge injury early in the season.
Did he score or?
No, but he could have scored.
Right.
And he was just quick.
Played well.
Good passes. Worked very hard. He was smiling. It was really very, very good.
Good.
And, you know, I've been critical of him, as most people have this season, but he was excellent. So you do wonder what if
so that's two
around.
Yeah, that's two performances in a row. You wonder now if that's going to be the catalyst for a longer stretch of consistent form from him. Whether he'll get the chance, too. I mean, that's the other thing as well, right? So
yeah, well, precisely. But, you know, I mean, Sturridge is not going to go anywhere. He's going to keep playing and starting more games, obviously. You can play him with him. Right. In that formation, I suppose. But yeah, we'll see. When Ricky Lambert came on, though, I just kind of reinforced that he's just not ready for this.
Not a fan?
I like Ricky Lambert. The guy, the player, you know, at Southampton, he was very good. But at this level, as much as the Saints are actually higher in the standings than Liverpool this season, I know that. But
He's not a Liverpool player.
Level, yeah, and he's not there.
I understand.
He just isn't. He isn't there. Blackburn beat Stoke. Surprise there. West Brom beat West Ham. Derby fell to Reading and Villa.
Villa won, right? Yeah.
Beat Leicester. Tim Sherwood wasn't in charge of this one, but in the stands. Gave a halftime team talk, apparently. Two goals.
Scored. When was the last time they scored two goals?
They have 12 in the season, so do the math.
Wasn't it 13 now?
That was FA Cup, though. 12 in the league.
No, but did they score against Chelsea, remember?
No, I thought it was 12 now, isn't it?
I thought it was 12 before the Chelsea game.
Could be right.
Maybe I'm right.
Let me have a look here.
Anyway, it's a low amount of goals.
It's awful. It's the worst in I think, top four flights of European football.
Right. So they're through to the
Villa,
court.
Villa, all the way down there. Yeah, of course they are.
I think it's 13.
They have scored 13 goals. Right. You are correct.
Of course.
No, 12 goals.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they have scored 12 goals. Jesus. Awful. And what about Bradford? Bradford, they get another scalp.
Yeah, amazing.
After beating Chelsea last time out, they beat Sunderland
2-0. And then a couple of years ago, they went to the
League Cup, right?
League Cup final.
Love their cup football.
Yeah, good for them.
It is. Love the FA Cup. Hope you enjoyed that on Sportsnet World this weekend. And of course, we'll continue our coverage throughout the season as we hit the quarterfinal stage now in the quarterfinal. Yeah, quarterfinal stage.
Have they done the draw yet?
No.
I didn't see.
United's playing Preston today.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They got to wait for that.
This afternoon, which you'll find on Sportsnet World.
Yes.
I guess 3 o'clock, is it?
2:45.
2:45, is it? Yeah. All right. We, of course, cover the Champs League throughout this week as well, and the Europa League on Thursday for the schedule. Check out sportsnet.ca.
Yep, and lots of preview coverage on sportsnet.ca. We've got a really cool blog on PSG from an analytical perspective from Sam Gregory. And
I read that. And are they, should they be considered a Champions League favorite, you know, despite their flaws in La Liga?
Yeah. And he's comparing them.
Interesting numbers.
It's comparing them to the past five winners, and the past five winners have played very different styles. So it was an interesting read.
I might steal some of those stats from him before
the
broadcast tomorrow.
And then Ethan Dean Richards wrote a really interesting blog about Chelsea and Jose Mourinho, about how basically, and I kind of raised the point with Bobby, how Mourinho was given very much, you know, carte blanche this offseason to go get Costa.
Sure.
You know, he's bringing Cuadrado now. He's brought in Fabregas. So really,
it's his team.
It's his team, and he's got it. But with that comes responsibility. He can't come up, you know, empty again like last year.
Well, you know, I was looking at the team and the squad in the PSG match last year when they won 2-0.
Right.
Right? When Chelsea beat PSG last year. And the key players in that one were, you got David Luiz gone. Actually at PSG now. Frank Lampard gone. Sami Eto'o gone. Off the bench and key in that game. Torres gone. Schürrle gone. Barr, who scored the game, the winner to advance, gone.
Wow.
Six players played key roles in that match last year, gone. And
that's really interesting.
Far better team now.
And Cech would have been started.
Cech was in goal, yeah.
So.
Yeah, so another one, yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's still right, there, but.
It's interesting. I know Josie hasn't said who's starting the game tomorrow. Cech's been his boy the last week or two. Well, not a week or two, because I guess he didn't play this weekend, but because Courtois made some mistakes, right? Hadn't been himself, and you got Cech sitting there. And you question, why would they keep both those goalkeepers in the books? Well, this is why.
Yeah.
One is dip in form. In comes Cech. He's been great.
Yeah.
Been very solid. And at the same time, he's going to push Courtois to find his form again. So it's working beautifully.
It'll be interesting.
Perfect storm.
It'll be really interesting. I mean, you know, you make a valid point about losing all those guys, but still, Eden Hazard, Diego Costa.
Yeah.
Oh, Fabregas.
No, he's, I was saying, he's molding it into his vision now, right? Yeah. He's seen Zouma now starting ahead of Cahill.
Yeah, which I find
I don't
really
going to change, though.
I find that really interesting. Really, really interesting.
Zouma wasn't cheap. Very expensive.
He wasn't.
And Cahill's a very limited centre-back.
He is, but I wonder if this is just all strictly because they paid so much for Zouma. Did Cahill... I know Cahill... I think he was very good last year. And obviously he's not... He hasn't been up to that same standard this season, but...
But Josie didn't buy Cahill, did he?
No.
It was... Who would have bought him? Was it Ancelotti?
It would have been... I think so.
Maybe, yeah. But Zouma was a Mourinho buy.
Yeah.
Right? Speaks for itself. And... If you got Cahill and JT side by side, not the most mobile back two.
No, it's a pretty slow.
Yeah. So either Zouma, that takes care of that.
Yeah.
So I wonder what Cahill's future is.
And that's kind of the point I'm making. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right, JMO, anything else you want to get to?
No. I don't want to rant about the weather. So.
You're not happy, are you?
No, I'm not.
You're not digging the minus 40 degree temperatures.
No.
Can't imagine why.
It pisses me off. And these Jamokes who like cold weather.
Jamoke. What's a jamoke?
That's just an
idiot. Is it something you eat?
No, it's just another word for like a clown or anything.
Is it a jamoke? That's great.
Yeah. This is these idiots who like winter. I mean, give your head a shake.
I don't like winter. I'm just trying not to complain about it because I can't do much about it.
No, you suck.
I hate it.
You should be miserable like the rest of us.
No, I am miserable. Fear not. I am miserable.
Oh, okay. Fair enough then.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that. That's been the Soccer Central podcast. We're back on Thursday with the lesser version of the podcast, those two jamokes.
There you go.
Right context?
Perfect.
Nice.
Jamokes. Perfectly applied to
Thomas Dobby and Brendan Dunlop. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. And our thanks to Bobby the Brains McMahon. Check him out on Twitter, please. He's fantastic. And I'll see you tomorrow on Sportsnet across the country doing all things Champions League. See you then.
Cheers.